Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the excellent Erica Bon Barbagris, the magnificent Mark Munday, and the superb Scott Adams. This is Ange, your regular host, but today we bring you Tracy and Wen talking about Wrath and Glory, the new Warhammer 40k role-playing game that Wen worked on, and Iron Edda Accelerated, Tracy's new game coming soon from Encoded Designs. We're going to dispense with everything else and let them get right to it.
For this special edition of a Gnomecast, we have gnomes talking to gnomes. I'm Tracy Barnett, and I am here with...
This is Wendolyn Reichel.
And today we are going to talk about two projects that each of us have been involved in recently. Wen is going to ask me about Iron Edda Accelerated.
Yeah, congratulations on your Kickstarter, which just concluded over 200% funded. That's incredible.
Thank you very much. And what am I going to be asking you about?
You're going to be asking me about Warhammer 40,000 RPG Wrath and Glory, which came out at Gen Con this year.
Wonderful. Do you want to ask me a question first, or should I start?
Sure. No, I'll kick it off.
Awesome.
All right. So I am familiar somewhat with Iron Edda. I haven't gotten the opportunity to play yet, but tell me how you came up with the setting and what it's all about.
Iron Edda originally started as a stretch goal for somebody else's Kickstarter back in 2013.
Oh, wow.
It was a mecha Kickstarter, and I wanted to write a stretch goal for something, but I don't really know like anime-style mecha stuff too well. But what I do know is fantasy settings. I was also playing a lot of Skyrim at the time.
Nice.
And I started to think about what it might be like if the massive dwarven constructs in the underground ruins in Skyrim made it up to the surface and what would fight those in a Skyrim setting. And I was like, well, living giants are boring. And dragons is a too easy of an answer. But what if the giants were dead and you could just summon their bones from the ground? And Skyrim has a lot of really Norse themes going on in it. And it was just like a natural, like the snowball just kicked off at that point in time.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's where the whole thing got its genesis. And since then it has been, I wrote it up as that stretch goal, which was never published because unfortunately they never paid me. But it was Creative Commons licensed, so I then wrote War of Metal and Bone, which kickstarted in 2014 using Fate Core with a little bit of Fate Accelerated in it. And then we just did the Kickstarter for Iron Edda Accelerated.
And how did you decide to make that leap from Fate Core into Fate Accelerated? What does Fate Accelerated have going for it that really called to you?
So there's a framework for Fate Accelerated that was presented in Dresden Files Accelerated by Evil Hat, where instead of just doing sort of freeform character creation, you pick a mantle, which is a collection of conditions that let you do certain things at certain times, powers-wise, and then certain stunts that are associated with that mantle. And when I pitched the idea to Encoded Designs, I basically wanted to give Iron Edda one more chance, because when I did War of Metal and Bone, I didn't know how to do a sustained marketing push. I was still a relatively new game designer, so there are a lot of mistakes that I made along the way, both creatively and professionally. But I still believed in the setting, and I thought that honing down things into that sort of mantle-based framework would be really powerful. And it turned out it really, really was, because in the original, you had these powers, right? You could summon the bones of a dead giant from the ground and absolutely go kick some dwarven ass.
Yeah.
Or you, the seer, could like enact these broad magical effects. But there was no real cost for using those powers. In the condition-based setup that Accelerated can use, you have to have some way to recover your powers. Or there can be like drawbacks to them. If you do so much or go so far, then I included conditions in a lot of those, I call them destinies in Iron Edda Accelerated. I included a lot of things where there are like social ramifications for uses of power, right? Like people know that the giant inside of you is overindulging in its worldly desire, or people know that the seer has manipulated the leader of the Holdfast.
Oh, wow.
And to get rid of those things, you have to do other non-power related social interactions to get back your big boomy magical abilities. So there's this constant balancing act of, well, I can use my big world shaking powers, but I'm still tied to this place that I call home and all the people that are in it.
I love that. I think for me, having some kind of narrative consequence and, you know, whether that's antagonistic or whether that's the people who care about you holding you accountable for your actions, I think that's so powerful. In my opinion, like that's one of the ways that you encourage mechanically people from being, you know, the murder hobo type of characters and really make them become three-dimensional people. So very cool.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that it was like an itch that I didn't know I needed to have scratched.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I started doing the design, I was thinking about what it would mean for the bone bonded to lose control and have the giant like riding them around for a while.
Yeah.
And what that would look like. And when I hit upon that, it all just sort of clicked together. And I was like, well, no, that's the hook. That's the price you pay for this power. And I was able to take those kinds of things and extend them out to all the really powerful destinies, because there are some like the Seer, the Rune Scribe, the Bone Bonded, the Shield Bearer, they're all heavy hitters or can take a lot of damage.
Yeah.
The other cool thing that did is it let me make some destinies that are designed with that social aspect at the forefront and have the power sort of on the back end, almost in reverse, right? So there's a farmer and a crafter and a merchant and a bandit. And those four especially are very people-centered and story-centered explicitly to begin with.
Yeah.
But like the crafter can make an item of world-shaking capabilities like once per long story arc.
Oh, wow.
And then give that to anybody. And then they can go do or use it themselves. And suddenly they have an ability that rivals that of the bone bonded, but only in a very specific, narrow capacity.
Right. It's kind of a kingmaker ability.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's really interesting to me to have there be this epic, massive Ragnarok world ending storyline going on, but to have the story of the game, of every individual game session, be very personal.
Yeah.
And have it deal with the people who are around you. That's my favorite kind of gameplay.
Yeah, I like that a lot. One of the things that is a common theme in those world ending, life shattering kind of games or books is that you keep having to escalate the big bad guy because they don't focus on much as the on the personal ramifications. And I think if you take that opportunity to pull it back and say, no, you're really living your life in addition to all this going on, you can avoid that having to escalate the power level sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's completely accurate, because the hooks that you get from the beginning of creating all this stuff as a group are all centered around your holdfast and the problems that are going on. And everything else naturally proceeds from there. So you could solve the problems of your holdfast, but as a natural consequence of doing that, you're going to have sort of knock-on effects that just occur that the GM can then come up with, or you can come up with as a group. So you really, things will escalate, but they're not going to suddenly, like you're not just going to suddenly be fighting the gods, you know, by the end of your 10th session. Like it's still about you and the holdfast and the people around you.
That's really cool. I love that.
Cool. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Warhammer 40,000? I mean, if someone's never heard of anything related to Warhammer, like what is all this about?
Yeah, sure thing. So Warhammer 40,000 was created by Games Workshop back in the 1980s. And it was a primarily tabletop role-playing game, but miniatures game, war game. And then there have been kind of added on into that a lot of different things, including video games and tabletop role-playing games. And Wrath and Glory, which I'll talk about in a minute, is our new implementation, completely new system, standalone from prior RPG lines for Warhammer 40,000. So the setting overall is it's close to the year 40,000. Bad things have been happening to humanity. There was a savior who is now considered the god emperor of mankind, who is fighting to keep the forces of chaos and the warp back away from humanity and keep humanity safe. Now, he ended up taking a basically mortal blow and is kept alive in a golden throne on Holy Terra, otherwise known as Earth, and is keeping the Astronomicon, which is like this psychic beacon, up and running. But this is the grim darkness of the far future. So the way he keeps the psychic beacon going is that he's fed 1,000 psychers a day, psychic people, to keep that alive. So the term grim darkness, I think, was coined in relation to Warhammer 40,000. And it's in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. That's pretty much the tagline that you can go off of for everything. So there are several factions beyond the Imperium of Mankind, including a couple of Xenos factions, two of which are included as playable races. And Wrath and Glory are the Eldar, also known as the Eldari, and the Orcs. And then there are Chaos forces as well. Typically, those are your opponents, Chaos Space Marines, Daemons from the Warp, and so forth.
All right.
So you've got all of these factions kind of pressing in against each other. And at the end of 7th edition Warhammer Tabletop, they had a huge incursion of Chaos powers, Abaddon's 13th Black Crusade, tear the Imperium in half.
Oh, just the 13th one.
Yeah, just the 13th one. It's been building for a little while. So it tears the Imperium in half. And the thing that mankind's always had going for it is not that we have the best technology or the highest amount of science or anything like that. Basically, all of that has degraded to the point of being superstition and almost magic. But what humanity has had going for it is just the sheer number of people that it can throw into the war machine and grind under those gears to lubricate the war machine. So
that if I never have to hear the word lubricate used in relation to a war machine, I think I'll be fine. Oh, that sounds so gross.
Yeah. So ultraviolence is the name of the tone that comes through in Warhammer 40,000. So there is a fair amount of like anime spouts of blood that occur and whatnot. But anyhow, so the Imperium's now ripped in half. And the thing that humanity had going for it, all these masses of people that it could throw at its problem, is now not really an option anymore. There is no resupply to the far side of the Great Rift in what's called the Imperium Nihilus, the Dark Imperium. And that's where Wrath and Glory is set. So everything is grimmer, darker, and more desperate than ever. And I think that provides the opportunity for an entirely new exploration of both the Imperium of Mankind as well as the Orcs and the Eldari.
I mean, I can tell from the way that you're talking about this that you really like dig this setting and you dig what's going on with it. What's your personal history with Warhammer and how did that like lead you in to this role as one of the designers on this new edition?
Yeah, so I've been playing in Warhammer as an RPG now for close to a decade and about 6 years straight for the last 6 years. So I adore it. I adore the fiction, and role-playing is the way that I came to 40K. So it's very important to me that we bring this new addition to people, bring people into the Warhammer 40,000 setting and give them a good experience. I live in Colorado and happen to know Ross Watson, who became the project developer for this whole new system through Ulysses North America. And he actually came to me really early on in the process when nobody even knew until Gen Con 2017 that anyone had picked up the license. Mm-hmm. So it was very hush-hush when he came to me in January of 2017 and said, hey, I'd like to pick your brain and get feedback on what we can improve about Warhammer 40,000 as a system since it's completely redesigned. So that was very cool. And then in March of 2017, I was at a different convention, GaryCon in Lake Geneva. And I start getting texts from Ross that say, hey, we need to come up with a name for this system. So do you happen to have anything? And I was like, hang on a minute. Like, I'm at a convention right now. I'll get back to you. And so I came back to Colorado and went to work, and on one of my work breaks, I scribbled down like probably 4 or 5 dozen different names that I thought might be an option. And actually, he came back and told me that Wrath and Glory, which was one of the ones I suggested, was going to be the name of the new system. And I was like, you know, Ross, that's very nice of you to say that, but you don't have to blow smoke up my ass, right?
Right.
So, you know, then it started to get real as emails started to fly to the other writers and the design team and whatever. And I was all like, okay, at some point it's going to be like, no, when sorry, this isn't actually the thing, but thank you very much. And then, you know, like we got to the announcement in August of 2017 and going to Gen Con, and it was just super crazy to go and see Wrath and Glory printed on a banner above some Ultramarine Space Marines, like in the booth at the dealer's hall at Gen Con. I was like, okay, I didn't know that was a bucket list item, but there it is.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's like, you did that.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
It feels like my baby. It feels very close to me, even though like there is an amazing and huge design team of Warhammer 40,000 specialists. And Ross Watson being the lead of that team is probably the preeminent North American 40K person. So it's just amazing to have been part of the team and included from such an early stage.
That's fantastic. So I've got a couple of questions that I think sort of lead off of that, and you can address them in whatever order you wish. The first one that comes to mind is, because it's so close to you, like, what's your favorite thing about the new system that you helped come up with? And the second one is more related to the setting and why you dig it so much. Because I think that there's a feeling I've seen online. People have been like, we don't need Grimdark right now, right? We need stories of hope and things like that, because the world is bad enough right now. We don't need to revel around in more darkness. So I'm curious as to like what draws you to that kind of story and what value you think it offers like in a bigger public discourse.
Sure.
So two real simple questions for you.
So let's start with the setting question, since everyone just heard it. What I love about the setting and why 40K and the grim darkness is still a place that I'm interested in playing in. I think for me, one of the great evolutions of the 40K setting comes with this Dark Imperium. And I don't know how much, you know, timing wise Games Workshop had considered that when they created that at the end of mid 2017. But I feel like the Dark Imperium opens the door for me as a player to make some desperate alliances that before potentially would have just been considered heresy and never allowed. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I'm enjoying exploring as part of the convention games is the opportunity to interface potentially with some Xenos, the Eldari, or the Orcs, and see how with humanity not being able to resupply and not having the huge wealth of people to throw at its problems, where does it reach out and where does it keep to its, you know, strictures that it's always adhered to? And I think that is a really interesting role-playing opportunity from kind of a meta perspective. Like, do our characters just continue forward and say, we're not going to work with anyone regardless of who they are because that's what we've always been taught? Or to say, now is the time that we have to reevaluate that. And the Gathering Storm, the books that ended out 7th edition tabletop, really opened the door for that, because in the fiction, the Ultramarines start working with the Eldari to try and keep chaos at bay. And there's even a Necron character that comes in at the last minute and saves Creed from the world of Cadia. So I mean, it's a little bit selfish and distant, but at the same time, these pieces are working together. And I think seeing the Imperium of Mankind and the Tech Priests of Mars and everybody working together in the official fiction really does open up the door for that to continue forward as part of Wrath and Glory. So I think for me, I like exploring things through role playing that otherwise kind of seem too close.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's for me in this case, do we continue on what we've always been taught or what the tradition says or what the status quo is? Or do we reevaluate that when the opportunity presents itself and things are bad enough? And that's why I think Warhammer 40,000 and Wrath and Glory are very relevant right now.
No, that totally makes sense. And it's a perspective I'd never considered, which is odd to me, as I don't find my game about Ragnarok to be very grimdark, mm-hmm. right? Because there's not a fatalistic bent to it because of sort of the Norse underpinnings, but there's this, well, we're going to fight because that's what we do.
Yeah.
Right. That's who we are as a people, is we're going to fight against this and we're going to preserve what is, you know, what's valuable about our home. And just from my knowledge of Warhammer 40,000 as like a thing, there's not a whole lot of that sentiment. So it just has always read as grimdark to me. And you've given me another perspective on that, which I really appreciate. So awesome.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much for asking the question. It's a great question. And it's, yeah, like you said, we don't need to like lean all the way into the nihilism. If that's what you want to do, great. I mean, that still has an opportunity that you can exploit. But if you're ready to push the boundaries of what it means to be in the Imperium of Mankind, Wrath and Glory also offers that opportunity. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. So the second question then, mechanically, like what's your favorite bit of game tech that you got to help create for this?
So there's a lot, and I can't take 100% credit for any of the things that I completely adore about the system, just because having been involved so long, I know it's gone through so many iterations and had so many hands on mm-hmm. it, but I appreciate what the team has come up with together. I feel like Wrath and Glory, even as a traditional, you know, stats and class-based RPG system, really brings in a fair amount of indie RPG opportunities. And some of those include, everybody has a personal resource called Wrath Points. And those Wrath Points are like chips or tokens or whatever that you have. And you can spend them in order to do multiple things, including making rerolls on a test, mm-hmm. Which I always appreciate as a person whose dice typically hate them. And then also to add minor narrative elements. And I appreciate that because I think one of my goals as a game designer is to try and help uplift the ideas of all the players at the table and say, you know, don't just be reactive to the story the GM is bringing you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and bring something to the table unexpected, make the game interesting for the GM, and do all of that and have a mechanical way to say, no, my narrative is fact. And I think what you were talking about with Ironetta Accelerated, you know, you've captured that as well. Again, that's just something that I really appreciate about the game system. Another thing is it's a D6 dice pool system mm-hmm. where you're looking for four, fives, or sixes called icons, or exalted icons are sixes. They count as two icons towards succeeding at a test, where a typical difficulty number is going to be about three icons that you need to succeed. And then success above and beyond that level, you get to go ahead and have some opportunities to do what's called shifting dice. So especially or specifically to those exalted icons, those sixes, you can take those for added effect. If you want to have something happen where, say, you need more damage because you're fighting a Chaos Space Marine or something like that, you can go ahead and shift those into your damage dice pool. You can shift in order to hit additional targets with an attack. There are a lot of options like that, or if you are outside of combat and say you're trying to negotiate with someone, mm-hmm. you can get better success with the negotiation. Or if you're trying to perceive, you know, what's going on in an area, like search for clues or something like that, you can get more information for those clues by shifting dice. So, and again, there are a lot of opportunities based on what you're trying to do on how the player can uplift their ideas and let the GM know, hey, this is important to me, and hence I'm shifting my dice in order to do this thing as opposed to this range of other good options.
Yeah, it's a very story games, indie games sort of mindset attached to, you know, what sounds like a pretty traditional system, and there's nothing bad with a traditional system. So that I like the blending of those two things. Not every system that does interesting story stuff has to have funky dice associated with it.
Yeah, totally. And just one more thing that I'll add in real quick is the complications. So you have an off-color die six that's part of your pool called the Wrath die. And if that gets an exalted icon as six when you're in combat, then you get all of these benefits, including a critical hit. But anytime that that rolls a one, you get a complication. And that doesn't change whether or not you succeed or fail at doing your test, but it does let you as the player add a narrative element to what's happening that's important to your character that's going wrong. And so that can be something as simple as I run out of ammo or my chainsword gets stuck in the wall or something like that. But I've had some really interesting occurrences. Like I had a commissar, which is like the morale officer of the Russian army. Mm-hmm. And the commissar is always in perfect uniform and they have this beautiful tall hat that they wear as a designation of their office. And so I had a player as the commissar have a complication and they had their hat destroyed. And the player, you know, immediately I knew that that was extremely important to this person as a player, it was extremely important to their character. And so they, while there was no mechanical disadvantage to having that happen, mm-hmm. they spent their next turn and spent a wrath point in order to make a narrative declaration that their character had a second hat stuffed into their long coat. And they spent their turn pulling out the hat and putting it back on their head. And for me, that was just like perfect. And I will probably remember that player and their character for as long as I'm running Wrath and Glory. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's one of those moments.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That sounds like I want to play that at some point in time. I think, you know what I think we need to do is the next convention that we're at together, we need to trade games.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I would love to play Ironetta Accelerated with you.
Yeah, I'll run a session of that for you, and you can run a session of Wrath and Glory for me, and we will both revel in the not maybe as grimdarkness of both the games.
Excellent. That sounds perfect. Hey, Tracy, I think it's about that time, so why don't you tell us where can we find Ironetta Accelerated going forward, and where can we find you on the internet?
Sure. So Ironetta Accelerated is going to production and layout and art and all that good stuff right now through Encoded Designs. And the current project timeline that they have in place has the game releasing in December, I believe.
Awesome.
That's the last thing I saw on the Kickstarter update. They are a pretty well-oiled machine, and they're going to be providing weekly updates to the backers. So I am pretty confident that that's going to be the set plan. It'll be distributed at least through DriveThruRPG, both in PDF and print. And it's possible that you might be able to find it at a game store someday, but I'm not sure exactly what Encoded's plans are for that just yet. As far as me, you can find me online on Twitter, primarily at The Other Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y. You can find my website, which is theothertracy.com. And there I have descriptions of all the games that I've done and all the ongoing projects that I have. You can also find the actual play podcast that I produce and GM for and play in called The Other Cast. We do a variety of different games and systems, and it has been a lot of fun to put that together over the years. So yeah, that's me. Wendelin, where can people find Warhammer 40,000 Wrath and Glory, and where can people find you online?
Yeah, for sure. Wrath and Glory is available on DriveThruRPG as a PDF right now, and is actually in the top spot yesterday, so that's pretty exciting.
Nice.
So go there to find your soft copy version. It should be available more generally after we get all of the hard copies out to pre-order backers, and they're thinking quarter three of 2018, so maybe October. That's the timeline I've heard most recently. And through your favorite local game stores, and check out Ulysses North America's website as well for more information and follow up on that. And then I can be found on the internet. You can look at my Gnome Stew profile to find out the spelling of my whole name, but at Wendelin Reichel on both Twitter and Facebook.
Wonderful. So that's going to do it for us.
Bye, everyone.
This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by Space Marines! Because even when I had no idea what Warhammer was, Space Marines were an integral part of my nerd experience. when you can get your college roommate to whine, "I'm not a space marine," in their sleep, you know you're doing something. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's another one to check out. Advantage to Insight. One fan, one topic, and the best result. Advantage to Insight speaks to the fans of Dungeons & Dragons and what interests them for you. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. And you can find me, Ange, at Orichaz13. I'm pretty sure we avoided the stew this week because even the head gnome doesn't want to mess with space marines.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
Blah, 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 blah. Yes.